These guys know how to connect with you about Boston sports.
Call and give us your take and then get off the phone.
Kelker and Maz on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Gostkowski from the 18-yard line with a 28-yard attempt for the win. Tied at 40. Allen right knee down. Ryan turns toward Gostkowski, not Cardona. The snap in play. Swing the right leg. Kick left into the uprights. Right down the middle. A game winner for Gostkowski. And the Patriots prevail. 43-40.
As the great John Sterling once said, raise your glass. Man, do I need one.
And that's high in the air to left field. Benintendi with his back against the wall makes the catch. The ball game is over. And Boston wipes the brow and hangs on to win game two. Kimbrel the save. Series all even at one apiece.
All right, 4:04 in the evening. Felger Maz got you covered here on 98.5, the Sports Hub FM dial in Boston. Simulcast across New England and the country on NBC Sports Boston. If you're watching us on TV, got a fresh new graphics package. Been pretty snappy. I like the look of it. Also, we're going to do the off-air show tonight, 6:15 on Facebook Live. So we'll answer your questions from the control room at 6:15 tonight on Facebook Live for the off-air show.
I'll try to pop my head back there.
Would you please pop in there?
It's a big night on the baseball reporters, but I'll come back.
I'll come back there and take a breather.
Last time I was waving from the glass.
Come back in there, drop a few swear words, and then you can leave.
Sure.
As promised, right back to your reaction to the Red Sox this weekend, Patriots last night. Steven Bulrica on the Sox. Go, please.
Yeah, this is why game one was a gift. Sale only gave up one hit, the hit underneath Yunez's glove. And then the Mookie Betts at bat in the fifth, when they had Verlander on the ropes with bases loaded, that bat didn't get his money's worth at that bat. And then when you hold Houston to two hits going into the ninth inning, you've almost got to win that game. And Murray, one of these wins with the Patriots roster with what they got, Felger will give them credit for at least one win before the season's over.
Okay.
Just one win.
Yeah, maybe. We'll see. I give him credit last night, kind of, sort of. The first thing is about, the Betts at bat. You wanted to hit on that.
So, look, the Betts at bat there, he swung at the first pitch, if I remember right. And he was that ball was a hittable pitch. I mean, you got Verlander on the ropes there, and he pounds it into the ground at third base, and that's it. And so he doesn't come through. And, you know, now look, he had a better game last night. But those are the ones you can't miss. Against a guy like that, you get him on the ropes there, and you get a chance to bury him and hit him with a big number, you gotta hit him with a big number.
Okay, but he did wake up.
He did. Yeah, he did. I'm not dumping on Betts. He was good yesterday. Belted the ball off the wall to start, like all of it.
Right.
I mean, he was better. No two ways about it.
Ryan,
I would just like to see something a little bit more consistent from someone other than Rick Porcello. Okay, you mentioned Porcello because I said earlier,
who are their big game players?
Right. Who's the clutch guy in this team that you say we can lean on him? Him we can lean on. And Porcello's a good one. He's about the only one right now that you can look at in this series and say, get him in there. Right? But coming into the postseason, he didn't have it either. But nonetheless, whatever, he's got it now. Yeah, other than that, I just haven't seen consistency from anybody.
Ryan and Lowell, what do you got for us?
Hey, guys, quick point on your pace of play. I actually found myself cheering for Porcello last night, not for the shutdowning, but just the fact that he was throwing three or four pitches every minute.
Yeah, he moves a little quicker.
But, I just wanted to bring you guys a post that Bregman has right now on his Instagram. It's actually a clip of the Astros going back-to-back-to-back off Eovaldi in June when he was with the Rays. And I wanted to sort of get your opinion on this because I felt this way last year with the Astros, that they had more of an edge than we did. And I know with the Judge thing and now this, like, some people think it's a little bit immature, but I wouldn't be that mad if someone on the Red Sox would act this way for once and kind of show a little bit of bite instead of, you know, just...
Sure. Hey, Mike, thanks for the call. Mike Silverman wrote about this in the Herald over the weekend, that the Red Sox need a little bit of what Bregman brings to the table.
I would agree. Yeah, I mean, it's one of the things that, again, as I watch them in these games, they all feel like they're nibbling or they're afraid to make mistakes. They don't feel super confident in this series. Now, you made a good point. In New York, in the series down there, when they went to New York in the division series, they played with a little more edge. The running on the bases was a nice sign of confidence there. They were aggressive. And so they were aggressive in the batter's box here against Cole. That's a good sign. But you'd like to see a little bit of that attitude, you know, with this team, and because I think you're going to need it to beat Houston.
So that Bregman is a yutz, but I would love to have him on my team. I'd love to have that yutz.
No, he can play.
I mean, and just the tood. It's just so tootie. Every little thing that he does is just dripping with something. The a-hole. But I don't know. Could you use a little a-hole?
Yes.
They could use his defense there.
Oh, my God. The defense is just
That's
butter.
What's more impressive to me than anything else. And I know the numbers he put up offensively. But even if it's a rocket down third, he's making that play.
Freaking butter.
Yeah, no, no. He's dynamite.
So he puts on his Instagram the back-to-back-to-back home runs against Evaldi.
I saw Carrabba's tweet about this, too. I don't know. Considering the Aaron Judge thing, maybe you're playing with fire there
right.
in terms of karma.
Right. I wouldn't. I'm generally against that sort of thing. Don't poke the bear. Don't wake somebody up. Don't give someone extra reason when they already have a reason, you know, don't wake a sleeping giant, blah, 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 blah. I'm a big believer in that.
So I didn't know this, and it's probably already out there. Did you know that Bregman was actually drafted by the Red Sox?
Yes, I do.
In the 29th round in 2012?
That's correct.
And he didn't sign. He must have gone to college, I'm assuming. And then the Astros took him number two overall. Oh, that's a kick in the ass, isn't it?
I think it was a sign bonus issue.
Probably.
I think they couldn't come together in the signing bonus, and so he went to college. Is that right?
Probably. I mean, again, he came out 4 years later or 3 years later and went number two overall, and guess who got him? Houston!
So that's what I think happened. I think the Sox had him, and it was a signing bonus, then he went to college. Derek in Norwell. Go ahead, Derek. What do you got for us?
Yeah, two more things that bothered me this weekend. First, they got to do something about Kinsler. They made a point in Durning.
Okay, your phone's crapping out. Well, Maz, you believe it should be Devers over Nunez every night. How about second base?
Well, I would have said Holt until game one when he had the cycle of suck. Well, 0 for 4 with three whiffs? He looked good against Verlander, didn't he? No, really.
That was a real cycle, too.
Yeah, that was. It was a complete cycle of suckitude.
No, but we're not getting the whiteboard out for that. That was an authentic, real cycle.
No, from the end of the New York series to the beginning of the Houston series, he experienced a cycle of life. Right back to ground zero. The cycle of suck, as I like to call it. He got his ass kicked in game one, and that was the end of the Brock star. Now, that said, I have no use for Kinsler against right-handed pitching. None. Zero. It felt like Houston had Holt scouted. He couldn't handle high velocity. He couldn't handle breaking ball down. He was manhandled in that game.
John in Fall River, what are your thoughts, please?
Hey, guys. This team's got Dombrowski's DNA all over it. It's just like the 2011 Tigers. They can mash the ball. They've got some starting pitching, but bullpen and defense seem to be the critical errors. I wanted to get your guys' thoughts on if they can overcome the DNA of Dombrowski.
Okay. The bullpen, Barnes and Brazier?
They've been really good.
Maz?
I mean, Barnes wasn't good in the first game. He was shaky in that one, but he got through it. But last night, they were terrific again. And look, Porcello coming out of the bullpen. You know, he's got a resilient arm, so he can pitch a lot. There's value there in Porcello for that reason. He's clearly got balls. So, but the keys right now to those middle innings are Barnes and Brazier. Don't kid yourself. With all the holes that the Red Sox had in that bullpen, to be able to get two clean innings out of those guys now, it feels like every time they put them in, you take it and run.
You haven't been able to redo your wheel there, Murray.
No, I've been, yeah, there's been some blah. How do you like the wheel of gutless bums now, Murray? But and look, what's the bigger sample size? They've been good, and credit to Brazzers and to Barnes. But there's a reason that
Did you
Alex,
fire up an extra month subscription there, Jimmy, or something? I thought the free trial ended on Brazier's.
Oh, no, he's worth the money. He's worth that subscription price. But why does Alex Cora still decide to have to go to Rick Porcello, a starter, you know, when he really needs it in the eighth inning? He still can't really trust some of these guys. They've been good, but let's everybody calm down.
Well, and remember, too, that Kelly, you know, is only in the game when they're behind. Right? So
yeah,
throw him out.
Like how much pressure's there?
Yeah, but Barnes and Brazier, and Barnes wasn't great on Saturday. He was better on Sunday. And that at bat on Sunday, if you remember, he came in for Price. And you remember he had Gonzalez, they thought struck out on a foul tip?
Yep.
Yes. Oh, my
God. And it wasn't even close.
It wasn't even close.
Do you remember that?
Yes.
And I thought, well, here you go. Now here comes a meatball, and he's going to jack one into the bullpens, and that'll be the end of it.
He went back to the same pitch.
Struck him out.
Got him on the same thing.
So that showed me a lot, right? Because that was an opportunity to crack and say, okay, here you go, like mental breakdown, didn't get the call, now we're pissed off, Price is throwing his water cup on the field, like the whole nine yards, here you go, meltdown coming. He went right back to it and threw another great pitch.
I actually appreciated that emotion from Price, because I think he knew he was about to get effed.
So, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that one showed me a little something. I was happy to see that he didn't let it get to him.
Take that, you son of a bitch.
The guy who effed him was the manager, who took him out one out from his first postseason win in his career.
And look, again, there's no way to know what Price was saying, but what do you think he was saying? We covered up his mouth. What do you think he was saying to Vasquez? Yeah, go get him! He was pissed! He saw the manager come out and he MF'd him!
Well, the the camera zoomed in on him. He was muttering something to himself.
Oh, he was pissed.
Atop the dugout.
I mean, he was one out away.
I'm one out away from my first postseason when I finally get this story over with, and this guy's coming out to get me.
Absolutely. Lost his mind. And you know what? Cora did the right thing.
Oh, brilliant move by Cora.
Cora absolutely did the right thing. I mean,
Monkey was off my back. Just, you're going to do me like this, Alex, you son of a bitch.
Murray, just think if Price actually wins a postseason game. What do we love? It's like kills. Like,
where's your narrative now? Where's your stupid hot takes now, huh?
30% of our material right out the window.
I know, we got to keep him right where he is.
I got to keep him winless.
Yeah, keep him right where he is. He's in the happy zone right now. It is. It's the perfect place. He's in the sweet spot. Got to keep him right there.
Well, hey, from his words, going to the postseason, he'd be happy with that. Doesn't matter if he wins any games as long as the team is successful.
He didn't He didn't deserve it last night.
No, he didn't.
No, please.
All he did was avoid disaster, right? That's it. He kept him close enough, which Cora is probably thrilled with, by the way. But Gonzalez, 235 against righties. Plus, you get the big right field at Fenway. Cora did the right thing.
He flipped Gonzalez.
Yes, Gonzalez was batting right-handed the previous time, and he jacked one off the freaking sign above the left field wall up there. So the next time around, of course, I'm not letting him face this guy again. No way. He's weaker from the left side. I'm bringing in a righty. I'm going to use the bigger part of the ballpark. That's what we're going to do. And he got a strikeout out of it. Right move.
We continue with your Red Sox thoughts and your Patriots thoughts, who, despite some spotty play last night, still pretty darn clutch.
Felger and Maz, the Sports Hub. Felger and Maz.
Wow.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
First and 10 from the 48 of Casey, dropping back, throwing a long ball right for Gronkowski. Separation takes me over the shoulder catch. And he's tackled by Parker inside the 10.
Two Hall of Famers just making a play at the end of a game when you need it. What a throw by Brady. And now you get the separation. And how do you for a guy like this get the jam with no help over the top? That's boneheaded by Kansas City. Why do you take advantage of it?
How much can this game show that there's mental toughness, you know, among the players and the ability to make the clutch plays when you had to make them?
I think we have a lot of clutch players. I think we have no problem grinding it out. That's what the football season is all about. I don't think we've seen our best. I think we can all play a lot better. I think that's what we plan to do.
All right, end of the day. It wasn't all clutch. I mean, Brady's fumble was atrocious. I hated some of the decisions with the ball that he made in the second half of that ballgame. Way too many shots down the field.
Well, and then there was another one, too. And I think about him in the first field goal that they settled for in the second half. If you go back and look at it, Chris Hogan's wide open in the end zone again. And Hogan had a decent night, and it's nice to see him get targeted and involved more. But, like, seemingly in the end zone, it's like Brady's not even looking his way.
So, but when they had to have it, they had it. Okay, so several clutch plays, and they pull it out. None more so than that long ball to Gronk that set up the game-winning touchdown. I still think if Kansas City was super, super, super smart, and they're not, they would have let him go and just score. But it's hard to tell your defenders to let him score from the 48-yard line. I don't know how you coach that exactly. That's a tough pull. You know, defend the field goal, but give up the touchdown. I mean, that's really what you would have had to say, right?
Yeah.
The Pats are at the 48. So it's like, defend between the 48 and the 30, but once they get inside the 30, just let them go score a touchdown.
Easier said than done.
Right, you can't do it.
No, too hard.
Instinctually, you want to make the tackle. You want to try to stop a guy.
I mean, once you get down by the goal line, it's let him run it in, you know, or somewhere close to there. Even like you say, the 20, for crying out loud, with the way they kick now, or, you know, the 30, as you said. But in the middle of that play, how do you do that?
Right, you don't. It would have been nifty, though, if they had thought that way. And meanwhile, let's see if Patrick Mahomes takes Andy Reid out of, you know, the choke zone. But I wonder, and this is here's an email of the day. This didn't occur to me at the time, but it's so true. Thomas emailed me and said, I wanted to point out one thing about that donkey head coach of the Chiefs. At the end of the game, after that long pass to Gronkowski, there was roughly 50 seconds left. The Patriots had three timeouts at the time and very good field position for the winning field goal. KC had one timeout left. So when does Reed decide to use that timeout? Right after the catch with 17 seconds left. WTF is that, he says. Any coach without his head up his rectum would know that you would have used that last timeout to try and ice the kicker in the final seconds. Not Reed. He decided to use it at a completely arbitrary moment in the waning seconds just for the sake of using it. It's so true. The Patriots, so Casey's typing the clock at 17 seconds does nothing. It does nothing. KC doesn't have enough timeouts to get the ball back. But But you do have that one timeout to go running down the sidelines and call the timeout with the side judge right before they're about to kick it to crawl inside the kicker's head.
Sure.
But he didn't give himself that opportunity because he used it for no reason with 17 seconds left.
I didn't think about that.
I mean, neither did I, but it's so true. Now, look, Gronkowski was going to make that kick either way.
That
was a bunny. it was a 28-yarder. He was going to make that.
Some missed that against Arizona. And remember, extra point against Denver a few years ago.
I think that was 32.
He gave extra points at 32, 33. But it's still the smart thing to do. You that talent is nothing for you.
No question.
So when the Patriots are lined up to kick the field goal, you call the timeout at the last second to see if you can mess with the kicker. Doesn't even occur to Andy Reid.
No.
And it doesn't occur to me either, but I'm sitting here. Andy Reid, it should occur to.
Right, because he's a coach.
So, anyway.
So, did you have a problem with them using their timeouts before that?
No.
Yeah, me neither. No, I heard some people questioning it. That's why I asked her. And I don't, to me, Kansas City, with the way their offense is, they have to use timeouts on defense. Absolutely have to use them on defense. And, you know, they can get down the field and score fast and manage the clock on offense. So, I had no problem with them doing it that
way.
You know,
and in fact, it worked because it was the drive before. And they actually stopped the Patriots.
They did. They forced a field goal.
That's when Gostkowski kicked the 50-yarder. So, again, I got it right here in front of me. 3:39 left. The Patriots start to think this way. They know it's getting to be the time you got to burn the timeouts or you know, make a decision there. So they run Michelle for 1 yard. Casey calls a timeout at 3:30. Then they throw a short pass to Gordon for 4 yards. Casey keeps in bounds. Casey calls her second timeout. So Brady has the 3rd and 5. That's when he threw that deep ball to the deep out to Edelman that he almost made that great diving catch.
Right, and then he looked at the officials. He thought the guy was hanging on him.
But so anyway, those timeouts worked for the Chiefs.
Yes, they did. And in fact, the problem was that Kansas City scored too fast.
Not their fault that the Patriots let him score a 75-yard touchdown on the first play.
I mean, it ended up hurting them that they scored that. Because once the Patriots get the ball, I said this to you off air, 3 minutes to go, to me, there was no drama there.
Ball game. No, the only chance KC had was to allow the Patriots to score early enough for them to go back and tie it on the other side, which is why when Gronkowski caught that ball over the top, the play is to let him go. You had gotten the ball back in 45 seconds.
I mean, maybe I'm in the minority. Again, but once the Patriots got the ball back, I said, Kansas City's got no prayer of stopping them here. The Patriots are going to get out and score, and the team that had the ball last won.
Okay.
Like, I honestly, I didn't find that part of the game entertaining at all.
Back to your thoughts. Patriots and Red Sox. Greg is in the car. Go ahead, Greg.
Hey, what's going on, guys? I can't understand what's going on with Brady and protecting the ball. I mean, what is he thinking? There's everybody around him. The ball's hanging out there, almost like the Super Bowl play. And then I have an issue with all these long passes he's throwing down, completely interceptable balls. What is he thinking? And even he said he made some mistakes, but I mean, Falk, you got to protect the ball in that situation, guys.
Come on. With you, Greg. I think he had an uneven night. I mean, he obviously made those great winning plays, so it's not like, you know, like he sucked. But he was too many deep shots in the second half. He should have been intercepted throwing to Gordon deep.
Absolutely. Right. That was right before the fumble, right?
It was right before the fumble, right? Yeah. It was in a sequel. Right. So it was also
that series. He sucked on that series. Because I remember writing it down like, good God, what an awful series. He underthrew him. The ball almost got picked and should have been picked. And then he's running around the back there like he's Fran Tarkenton for crying out loud, holding the ball out there when he had all the time in the world to just get rid of the freaking thing and get strip sacked. What a numbnut series that was. That one pissed me off to no end. Really, like, that was as bad a series as I've seen Tom Brady play in a long, long time.
How'd you feel about the fumble, Murray?
One of the worst plays I've ever seen him do in his career. Maybe the worst. The low water mark, I said earlier, was always the Colts game on a Sunday night like 4 years ago. He chucked it up into double, triple coverage. Like, what the hell are you doing? That last night, he had so much time. Dude, eat it. Throw it away. Like, that was just so uncharacteristic. It was like Favre at the end just trying to make a play because I'm Brett Favre. It was like, I'm Tom Brady. I'm going to make a play. Like, no, dude, just eat it. Take the sack.
I mean, that was like a rookie mistake, right? That was like a young quarterback mistake for a guy who's 41. To just waiting to get hit so he could fumble the ball.
What did he have there? Like 8 seconds? You could tell. When it got to like 5, 6, like, good dude, come on. Like, come on, come on, come on, come on, come on. You knew something bad was happening.
I mean, that was so bad. So bad.
Our buddy Matt's in Framingham. Go ahead, Matt. Matthew.
I'm here. So it's touching on what you guys are talking about. So I agree. Kansas City, they were scoring too fast. And in the second half, I feel like Brady almost felt like he had to like match Mahomes. And he totally left the game plan and started chucking them downfield, just these, you know, just low percentage plays. And I think the reason for that is in the NFL, as far as plays per scoring drive, it's the Rams and the Chiefs. And that's all good when you're playing like Oakland, but when you're playing against the Patriots and you're scoring too fast, you leave too much time on the clock for Tom Brady to do his thing.
So, Matt, let me stop you. Is that interesting? So Casey started to ramp it up, started turning into a track meet, and Brady thinks, I got to start chucking the ball all over. He sort of just got ahead of himself a little bit.
I wouldn't rule that out.
Possible.
Yeah, I wouldn't rule that out.
Not a bad theory, Matthew.
I mean, I'll tell you, I was just going back to look at that series quickly, the one I was talking about there when he flipped out. On the first play of that series, they ran White and got 11 yards. Then there was a pass down the sideline they threw deep to White, and the Patriots got called for illegal formation on that one.
Absolutely.
And they called it on Trent Brown, but it was actually Gronk. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Okay, then
was a Gordon play.
Right, then was the Gordon play, and then the fumble. It was one of the worst series I've ever seen Brady have. I mean, or the offense as a whole. It was absolutely god-awful. I wrote it down. It was so bad. Because I take notes
during
the game.
It was so bad that Maz actually took a note.
Exactly. I got my two index cards here. Had them side by side. One on the Red Sox. One on the Red Sox. One on the Patriots.
Look at this mess. What a beautiful night last night was. Last night was so freaking sporty with my two TVs. I figured it out. Just like, oh my God. It was so wonderful. Awesome.
It was
such a little sport dork orgy, as we say in our promo.
No, for you it was like porn for you.
Pants off. And I get to do it again tonight. Not that you're watching.
Oh, right, the Packers. And the Brewers.
Game 3 of the NLCS.
Oh!
It just moved. I know it's coming, but just you mentioning it, it moved.
Hey, what's up with your bullpen, by the way?
No one wants to hear about that. Maybe that's the off-air show at 6:15. Here's Murray's update.
This is Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Making sense of Boston sports.
There's no catching and no throwing. Anyone can play, no matter how hopelessly unathletic they are.
Felger and Mass, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Brady in the pocket from the gun with White to his right. Takes the snap, dropping back. A lot of time. Brady moves up. Pocket breaking down. He scrambles right, looking downfield. Now chased by Ford and company. Brady's in trouble. He's hitting. The ball's out, and it's going to be recovered by Bailey in Kansas City.
What are we doing?
Alvin Bailey able to recover as Tom Brady, trying to keep the play alive, eventually found himself surrounded, and the Patriots commit their first turnover.
It's the worst play by Brady in a long time. It's not smart right there. You know, after a certain point, it really runs out of your clock. He's so good at understanding the clock and where people are. I mean, you got a guy around his waist. You got a guy that hits him high. He's trying to run with the ball in the middle. You know, and credit Kansas City for coverage right there. Now, itself a ball game. You toy around like that.
And Zoe said what millions of people across New England said at that exact moment, except we added a word. What are you doing? That was just so bizarre. So un-Brady-like. But the game sped up on him that, you know, you're right. It was really that series. There was a couple series right in a row. We just deep shots and bad decisions and sort of weird.
Oh, my God. Mental lapse. That one series, as it was unfolding, I'm like, holy crap, what the hell is going on here? You know, whipped one down the sideline out of bounds to White, underthrew Gordon, and then ran around like he was, you know, like he was going to run for a first down. Like he was actually going to run for it.
Billy White Shoes Johnson out there.
Oh, God, please. It was absolutely awful. The whole thing was absolutely awful. I was floored. It blew me away that the Patriots let Kansas City back into that game. Like, that's the part I can't get around, Murray. 24-9 at halftime. Like, that's a layup. That's a layup for them. That's automatic. And they had to scramble a little bit at the end. Now, look, again, there was never any threat of Kansas City really stopping them in that game. So, but even so, the fact that they were behind them, like, you got to be kidding me.
Yeah, so they let them back in. But that's, you know, remember, go back to the prior game, and even though that it ended up a blowout, there was a stretch there. They let the Colts back in the game, too. You've had 2 weeks of uncharacteristic sloppiness on offense that have let the opponent back in.
I just think the big plays on defense is the thing that I stick with. You can be bad on defense, that's fine. The Pats have been bad on defense before, but they've always, always been able to prevent the big play. Like, that's the easiest thing to do in football. Just get back. Everybody get back. And that's the one that I was not expecting. I thought they would have cleaned up the big play thing in this game. We continue with your thoughts. Patriots, Red Sox, Tim and Quincy, go ahead on the Pats.
Guys, for some reason, I don't understand why you guys are Monday Monday afternoon quarterback bashing Brady like he played bad. He had one bad fumble. That's it. He's put up 38 points and 43 and won three in a row. And we focus on the problems of the offense.
Yes. Yes, that's right. Yes, we do.
No, so like I don't understand what he's surprised about.
Yeah, what's the issue?
It should be a layup.
Yeah, that's what you do.
Do you think we could come on and like say good things?
After the fumble, he was mostly brilliant, but the fumble was terrible. He made some poor decisions when they're settling for field goals where he doesn't find Hogan in the end zone and forcing. Okay, so I like that there's a connection going on between him and Gordon, but 9 targets last night. Like some of those were forced.
Discuss. That's not his fault. That's the offense. That's, you know. We've invested in this guy. We're bringing him along, and we're going to feed him the ball, much like we're going to feed Sony Michel the ball in the first couple weeks when he wasn't quite ready either. And I think this is part of an extended training camp for Josh Gordon. That's what you're seeing.
Yeah, but so you can tell, though, that they're not connecting, especially on like back shoulder throws, and hopefully that'll come. But if you want to try to force balls to Josh Gordon, can you do it in a couple weeks against Buffalo? You're going to do it in a night, you know, against Kansas City?
Fair point.
Find the open guy. Distribute the ball.
The one that stuck out to me was the one where, again, he ran along the back of the end zone. Collinsworth said it, too, but it struck me before Collinsworth even said it. Because Gordon ran into coverage, and Brady threw the ball a little behind him.
Gordon still doesn't know where he's going. He doesn't. I mean, he does kind of a little bit, but more plays than not, I don't think he does. The first series, first play of the game, I think, went to him. Then they went deep down the sidelines. I don't think he was even looking for the ball. And then on third and five or whatever, the first third down of the game, is it Gronk? No. Is it Edelman? No. Is it James White? No. They throw a little comebacker to Gordon on the sideline who's not even really looking for the ball. They're not even anywhere near on the same page.
Yeah, those were the two of that first drive. It's like, what the hell is going on?
They're trying to force the ball to Gordon and get that thing going, which, you know, if it pays off, you're onto something there. But in the short term, I think you're taking a little bit of a hit. What do we got here? How about James and Coventry for Maz on the Red Sox? Go ahead, James.
Maz, you're totally wrong on the Benintendi against the ump thing. You know how you get annoyed with the ineptitude of the callers, like, say, Scott and Weymouth? And useless and annoying he is on the phone?
Yeah, I don't get annoyed with you, though, James.
That's the same thing Benintendi is dealing with when the ball is 6 inches off the plate and he's got J.D. Martinez behind him and the bases are loaded and they're down a game in the series. If it was me, I would have punched the ump in the head. So therefore, Benintendi did the right thing by not punching the ump.
Okay.
So, James, all I'll tell you, though, is I just see a pattern with Benintendi. That's all. It's not about the singular call. He bitched about a call in New York, and you could argue that on both of them he was right. I just feel like the more you bitch, the more it's going to happen again.
You weren't down 0-1. It was game one, and I think it was a tie game at the time. Was it 2-2?
I don't remember.
Okay, either way, you were right in the middle of that game in game one, so you weren't down a game. And it wasn't 6 inches. It was a couple inches. It was off the black. But it was really, like, even though it's off the black, it's like, sometimes that call's going to go against you.
Well, that's right.
I mean, that's not a ball 100% of the time.
No, it's not. And so that's what bugs me about it, is that, you know, there's that old sort of rule, if it's close, take a hack. If it's close, take a hack. Or foul it off or do something. And then don't just turn around and bitch about the umpire all the time. Because the umpire's going to screw up. All I'm saying is don't always put it in the hand of the umpire. And I do, again, to me, it's the pattern with Benintendi that I get frustrated with. Stop acting like a big timer and actually make a play.
Ben in the car on the Sox. Hi, Ben.
Hey, gentlemen. Good afternoon. Great day to be a Boston sports fan. Two things real quick. One, I think moving forward that the Patriots, I actually have a lot of hope considering that I think we can play much better against Kansas City in the future as opposed to the improvements Kansas City can make. And second, a point about Alex Bregman. He posted on his Instagram story today highlights of Eovaldi with players in the Astros hitting home runs over and over. And about an hour and a half later, it was pulled down, and you can find it on Barstool now. But I thought it was very interesting that Bregman would put that content up and then pull it down a few hours later, probably by words of the manager or management.
Right, so you've got it wrong. Are you surprised Bregman would do something like that? No, he seems just a kind of hard-o to do something exactly like that. And you're surprised that it was taken down? Are you kidding me? I'm surprised it only took an hour for the Astros to have him take it down. And you better believe the Astros took it down or told him to take it down or whatever.
No, it's bad form.
Stupid. It's stupid.
I mean, this is the equivalent of Aaron Judge walking by the clubhouse playing New York, New York.
So unless you back it up, you don't back it up, you're a real donkey. You're giving someone extra reason when they already have plenty of reason. Waking up a sleeping dog, etc. Why? Why do it? You went to Boston, you got a split, that's just what you wanted. Now you're going home for three?
Especially when the guy who's arguably your best starter was an absolute puddle last night. Like, what are you tempting fate for now? It's not like you just dominated two games here.
Exactly.
I'll tell you, the Astros, you can sense, as much as people say they get some swagger, like, they were all pissed off about having to play at 5 o'clock in the first round. You know, there's this thing that they got going, like, they're the world champs, and what do they call it? The Astro Show or something stupid like that.
Oh.
There's some stupid term they have for it that they were referring to it as. And I think it was Bregman. And I would say, dude, you're on at 5 o'clock because you're in Houston. That's why, because you're in Houston. Nobody gives a rat's ass about Houston. So if you want more attention, you want more primetime games, get on one of the coasts and you got a shot. But as long as you're in Houston, you're playing at 5 o'clock.
Meanwhile, David Price last night. How do we assess that outing? We'll get to that with your calls in our long commercial-free segment next.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mazz on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
It's Felger and Mazz on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Felger and Mazz.
You know, it's almost inconceivable that he would have no wins at this point. But think of it this way. This is his 11th start in the postseason. His teams have never scored for him in the first inning until tonight.
A runner at first. He takes off. And a swing and a high fly ball deep left. This one's going to fly out of Fenway. Hits the banner above the monster seats. A booming home run for Marwin Gonzalez. It's a two-run blast, and the Astros lead 4-2. But now it's about stuff on the mound, and Alex Cora is going to take his chances with his pen. David Price will exit here in the fifth.
I thought he was a warrior and that he was going to compete. The best thing that I saw was the Boston fans recognize the effort and go out there, give him a standing ovation. And not only that, whenever he got someone in deep in the count, they all stood up to support him. And that's what I want to see.
I mean, we won. That's my first team win as a starter. So it's baby steps, it's baby steps. You know, I expect to win, but I'm very happy that we won.
Baby steps. Boy, the outpouring of support for David Price. Pedro's on board. Did you watch the pregame at all?
No.
And a little thing of just a whole Price stuff. And boy, Pedro was all up in Price's jock. Defending him on the Eckersley stuff totally as well. Like, all of it. So there's a real support thing going on there. Ron Darling. I'm sorry, Jimmy, you going to say something?
Pedro is on the Red Sox payroll, remember. He is a special assistant, so there's an agenda there.
Definitely. I mean, I'm gripped. I watch Pedro. Whatever he says, I'll stop and listen. And I also like him on the desk. I like TBS really knows how to do these pre- and post-game shows. Like, and I'm not saying it's as good as a basketball one, because Sheffield brings me nothing, and Jimmy Rollins brings me nothing. But Pedro, he sort of holds court. You ever see it?
Sure, I've seen it. Yeah, I didn't see it yesterday, but I have seen it.
He holds court at the end of the desk, and he's put on all this weight, and he doesn't care. His jacket's open, his gut's sort of hanging out. He just sort of sits back like this and just rambles. It's just great. I listen to every word. I love it. But he was all up in Price's jock. Darling makes a point to say no one's ever scored for him in the first inning. Like that's David Price's problem in the postseason. You people give him a standing ovation after 4 2/3, 4 runs, 4 walks. You're kidding me. Now that's a standing ovation? So have we lowered the bar on this guy or what?
Yeah, look, to me, and again, I don't know, maybe Ron Darling is still, you know, sore over Lou. I think it was game one of the World Series he lost to the Red Sox one year where the ball went through his second baseman's legs. He lost 1-0. Maybe he's still pissed that they didn't score for him that night. Like, but it's not about any one game with Price. That's what these guys are missing. It's the pattern. I mean, how many times do you have to go out there for crying out loud? The number is what it is. Of course not all his starts have been bad. Yes, he's had some bad luck in there too, but now it's a full-blown absolute issue. And it's like a phobia now, for crying out loud.
And last night solves nothing. Was it better? I even hate to say it's better. Just because it didn't get worse, or it wasn't the abject disaster his last two outings were, doesn't mean it's getting better. It's like,
no, just because you're a little bit better than your usual trash outing doesn't mean it's anything less than trash. It just doesn't smell as much.
When I did the ESPN Boston radio show, we'd pull a .02 and they'd say, well, we doubled our ratings. I'm like, well, that doesn't count. You guys, we went from 1 to 2. That doesn't. We went from 2 people to 3. That's nothing to toot your horn over. Don't you get it?
Of course.
So for David Price, so he doesn't completely puke all over himself. He just regurgitates a little bit in his mouth and drops it on the mound. And now we're standing ovations.
His ERA last night was 7.71.
Give me a break.
This is good?
It's not good.
Like, who's kidding who? So again,
his baseline's an F, and that last night was a D to a C minus. Yay. Because the expectations for this guy are so low that we're supposed to look at last night like it's some kind of quality start. No, not on my watch. See, it was a little bit better, especially compared to that nightmare in game two against New York. That's the lowest of the low, but that wasn't great last night.
And this is a full-blown epidemic now in baseball. The standards are so low for starting pitchers in general. Like, the idea that a guy pitches into the fifth inning and allows four runs, like, that is some sort of thing to celebrate now? It's ridiculous. That's a bad start. They didn't lose the game, so they survived it, but it's a bad start.
How do you feel about all the walks as a tactic? Okay?
I mean, I don't like it.
So, and again, just because I'm watching these shows, this was Harold Reynolds on the MLB Network, I thought did an excellent job of showing how Houston feasts on inside pitching. And their lineup is so right-handed.
Like, very.
I didn't appreciate this. But, you know, Sale and Price particularly, obviously lefties, and when Gonzalez slips to the right, they're, like, I think 8 of their 9 guys were hit from the right side.
Something like that, yeah.
Either 7 or 8 of their 9 hitters are from the right side. There's righty after righty after righty, okay? And those righties feast on inside pitching. And maybe they just been conditioned to that because of Minute Maid and that stupid porch down there. So you throw those guys inside, you're going to get hit. So the Red Sox have determined that they're going to stay on the outside corner, and if it's a walk, it's a walk, but we're not coming inside. Because when they've come inside, even here, they've gotten burned. Price's home run to Gonzalez last night.
Yep, he didn't come in enough.
Leaked over the inside part of the plate, and, well, you're right, it wasn't too inside, but it was inside, and he yanked it. Go look at the home run that Kimbrel almost gave up to Bregman on the last at-bat. It came inside. So the Sox are saying, we're going to be out of the zone. We're going to be either low, 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 high, high, or outside. And if they're not swinging, we'll take the base on balls, but we're not giving up home runs as a game tactic. How do you feel about that?
I don't like it. Because, again, first of all, it tells me two things. And that one, that, see, I thought there were points in that game last night where Price was a little more aggressive than he was the first time. More fastballs and pounded it a little bit more. And I'm happy to see that. But overall, it tells me they can't command it. Like, so we're going to pitch away. Okay, fine. But you can't throw for strikes. So, like, we'd rather have a walk than a homer. Okay, great. But can you still get someone out when you need to?
Here's pitching coach Dana Lavangie. He says, everyone can say we had 10 walks. But where were we at that point? We were in the game. We had a chance in the ninth inning being down one. He's talking about Saturday night, which was, oh, my God, what a tractor pull that thing was. But they were in the game. So we had a chance being down one in the ninth, said Lavangie. And I'm reading from Alex Spear in the Boston Globe. We've got two hits on the board. We're down 3-2. And we have 10 walks and 3 hit batsmen. But we're making pitches when we have to, getting out of innings, staying in the game. We're competing to the very end. So this is a game plan.
It's partially a game plan.
And so, I'm sorry, back to Harold Reynolds. He showed, he said, whenever you go inside the Astros, they kill you. And Price and Sale made a point to stay outside, 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 and they're walking guys because of it.
So, which again, it's fine to acknowledge what a hitter's strength is. But if you're also pitching to one of your weaknesses, what good does that do? So I would just as soon have an aggressive pitcher on the mound that makes the Astros react versus the other way around.
So
you're pitching around them. You see what I'm getting at?
Yes.
You're nibbling.
Okay.
I don't like nibbling.
Sale shouldn't have to nibble, but
correct.
Maybe he does now. Maybe he does.
I still don't like it.
And Price should not be a nibbler, but let's face it. He's a nibbler because he just can't nut up when it matters. He can't. So, I don't know. Do you really want David Price challenging guys inside?
Well, it depends on the guy and it depends on the situation.
Because he makes a little mistake there. It's gone.
Yeah. See,
He makes a mistake outside. All it is a walk.
So, Price and Sale are a little different because they're guys that can command. So, and now Sale, I don't know. You know, we'll see what happens here as we go forward. But Price, overall, both of those guys throw a lot of strikes and can hit the corners. I mean, they're good pitchers. Some of the other guys, they can't. They're just not capable. So, look, it didn't blow up on him in this game, but wait till it does, because it will. You can't walk 10 and survive all the time. You can't do it.
So, David Price.
I mean, they did lose the game.
They did on Saturday, but they hung in there yesterday. David Price wasn't as bad as he was in the previous two outings. That doesn't mean he was good.
Yay.
And people say, well, it was an improvement. I mean, I guess. I mean, anything's greater than zero. So, Anything above a complete disaster is going to be a quote-unquote improvement, but you actually have to pitch well to say you've improved. It was just less bad. So, no. And I don't, you know, the crowd at Fenway, you want to cheer him, that's fine. You're willing him, right? You're trying to prop him up.
40,000 therapists trying to support this mental mess of a pitcher. And frankly, fine, do what you want, but I expect better. The smartest, saltiest fans in this region are Red Sox fans, and you're there last night. Oh, David. Oh, wonderful. Wonderful. That's good. That's good. That's good. Baby steps. Baby steps. We need you. And I get it. Like you said, Maz, these people have hitched their wagon to this guy.
Oh, yeah, they bought in.
You kind of need him to have this team get out of this series and maybe win the World Series. You're going to have him be better than what he was last night or do what he did last night.
So support him if you must. I get it. Just don't tell me you think that was actually acceptable. That's what you're looking for out of $31 million a year. And Cy Young winning. And you're forgetting how amazing he was in the regular season and how far off he's fallen from that. Do you understand the gap between the way he looked in the regular season and what he looks like now? He's the one who looks like he's got an arm problem. So don't tell me you actually think it's a good performance. You want to support him? Support him. Great. You know, try and get the most out of him. I understand it. He was bailed out by the fact that the other pitcher crapped his pants. Garrett Cole. Just chuck it into the camera well in the first inning. Why don't you? Good God. Four pitch walks. Like, what happened to this guy?
No, that's true. This time there wasn't as big a mess in the diaper. That's exactly how you can describe it.
Well, the other one had poopy pants too. All right. So anyway, what a night. What a night. I'm going to leave you with a quiz with a question. Think about it for 90 seconds while there's no commercials, because Murray's going to give you an update. But someone said this morning, quote unquote, why did it feel like both home teams lost last night? Who said it?
Guess. I know who said it.
Who said it out there? Who do you think said that? We'll give you the answer and our thoughts are after Murray's update again. No commercials.
Michael Felger, Tony Maserati, Felger and Maz.